This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Born on a mountaintop in Tennessee, green estate in the land of the free, raised in the woods so's he knew every tree, killed him a bar when he was only three. Davy, Davy Crockett, king of the wild frontier.
Good afternoon, you're listening to Bookmark. I'm Umar Pagan, I'm PK Pagan, and this is 50 Books in 50 Weeks, brought to you in collaboration with Borders. Now, throughout the month of September, I will be taking a look at some truly remarkable children's books. They are musts for every bookshelf, irrespective of whether you're 5 or 50. For me, as I suspect it would be for you, this is quite the trip down memory lane, a revisiting of some of our favorite reads as children.
Fixing up the government and laws as well, took over Washington, so I heard tell, and patched up the crack in the Liberty Bell. Davy, Davy Crockett, seeing his duty clear.
More or less the usual reason, which is one has one's own. I tried to tell a story a night, a made-up story a night. Most of them pretty bad, but now and again you'd tell one and you'd see a little spark of interest, and if they ever said the next night, tell us some more about that one, you knew you had something. This went on for quite a long time with a story about a peach that got bigger and bigger. I thought, well, heck, why don't I write it? So I did.
I love Roald Dahl. I love his books today as much as I did reading them growing up. Charlie, Matilda, Danny, and the BFG were more than just characters in a book. They were my friends, friends with which I shared grand adventures. I was somewhat obsessed. I don't think there was a single chocolate bar I ever unwrapped without the secret hope of finding within it a golden ticket. I never did. But of all Roald Dahl's books, the one that always had a special place in my heart, the one I regularly reread, even today, is the story of that fantastic Mr. Fox. There is no telekinetic schoolgirl, no giant airborne fruit, no humongous bumpkin dispensing dreams through kids' windows, and there is no little kid who inherits the greatest chocolate factory of all time. All there is this wily fox and his three-pronged nemesis.
Down in the valley, there were three farms. The owners of these farms had done well. They were rich men. They were also nasty men. All three of them were about as nasty and mean as any men you could meet. Their names were Farmer Boggis, Farmer Bunce, and Farmer Bean.
The novel hangs on this wonderfully mocking nursery rhyme that the local kids have invented for the three farmers, Boggis, Bunce, and Bean, the three despicable villains of this particular fairy tale. Boggis, Bunce, and Bean, one short, one fat, one lean, those horrible crooks so different in looks were nonetheless equally mean. And they were truly horrible individuals. In fact, they are three of the most horrible and disgusting people you are ever likely to meet. Mr. Boggis has a prosperous chicken farm, and his neighbour Mr. Bunce raises geese and ducks. Mr. Bean, who is the cleverest of all three, raises turkeys, and he drinks cider all day, choosing not to eat anything at all. All three of these men are fed up. Mr. Fox, who lives in a hole with his wife and children, has been raiding their farms night after night, and they have now decided that the time has come to get rid of the fox once and for all.
Great heavens! It was the barrel of a gun!
Quick as a whip, Mr. Fox jumped back into his hole, and at that same instant, the entire wood seemed to explode around him. Bang, bang! Bang, bang! Bang, bang! The smoke from the three guns floated upward in the night air. Boggis and Bunce and Bean came out from behind their trees and walked towards the hole.
"Did we get him?" said Bean.
One of them shone a flashlight on the hole, and there, on the ground, in the circle of light, half in and half out of the hole, lay the poor, tattered, blood-stained remains of a fox's tail.
They begin their campaign by standing outside Mr. Fox's hole and waiting for him, their guns in hand. Indeed, they almost do manage to get the fox, shooting off his splendid tail, but thankfully, Mr. Fox survives the attack and he is once again forced back down into his hole. Next, the farmers try to dig out the fox, but it turns out that a fox can dig faster than a man, and Mr. Fox and his family even manage to outdig the farmers' excavating machines. Exhausted by their efforts, the farmers then decide to wait the foxes out. Eventually, the animals will have to come out, for they will soon need food and water, and when they do, the farmers and their helpers will be waiting for them.
After about an hour, Mr. Fox stopped digging.
"Hold it," he said.
They all stopped. They turned and looked back up the long tunnel they had just dug. All was quiet.
"Phew," said Mr. Fox. "I think we've done it. They'll never get as deep as this. Well done, everyone."
They all sat down, panting for breath. And Mrs. Fox said to her children,
"I should like you to know that if it wasn't for your father, we should all be dead by now. Your father is a fantastic fox."
Mr. Fox looked at his wife, and she smiled. He loved her more than ever when she said things like that.
Inside his tunnel, Mr. Fox and his family get weaker and weaker, and Mr. Fox is just about to give up when he gets an inspired idea. Maybe there is a way to survive this dreadful calamity after all, and maybe the other digging animals in the neighborhood who have been sorely disturbed by the farmers' activities can be saved as well. Now we begin to understand the basis for the attraction of the story. There are kids eyeing the mean adults living in the community. There is Mr. Fox, the complicated protagonist who is all set to outwit them, to run circles around them as the children who made up the rhyme whoop and holler in approval. It is simple, straightforward, familiar. Only it isn't, because that is not quite how it works out. Mr. Fox stands out as a dark and rather odd romantic fable with real moments of sadness and elation. That it is so short and yet manages to draw characters of real depth is a testament to Roald Dahl's craft and intellectualism. Mr. Fox's ongoing battle with the ugly farmers, who are made almost demonic in their depiction, is an interesting take on the literature that looks at humankind's relationship to the landscape. There are flashes of Richard Adams's Watership Down, even the poetry of Edward Thomas, who forever shook at the thought of the iron blade of modernism cutting through his beloved countryside.
Boggis picked up a steaming chicken and held it close to the fox's hole.
"Can you smell this, Mr. Fox?"
he shouted.
"Lovely, tender chicken. Why don't you come up and get it?"
The rich scent of chicken wafted down the tunnel to where the foxes were crouching.
"Oh, Dad," said one of the small foxes, "couldn't we just sneak up and snatch it out of his hand?"
"Don't you dare," said Mrs. Fox. "That's just what they want you to do."
"But we're so hungry," they cried. "How long will it be till we get something to eat?"
Their mother didn't answer them, nor did their father. There was no answer to give. As darkness fell, Bunce and Bean switched on the powerful headlamps of the two tractors and shone them onto the hole.
"Now," said Bean, "we'll take it in turn to keep watch. One watches while two sleep, and so on, all through the night."
Boggis said,
"What if the fox digs a hole right through the hill and comes out on the other side? You didn't think of that one, did you?"
"Of course I did," said Bean, pretending he had.
"Go on, then," tell us the answer, said Boggis.
Bean picked something small and black out of his ear and flicked it away.
Boggis, Bunce and Bean are not old-fashioned farmers leaning on fence posts and tilling the soil. They are industrial employers who, when hunting down Mr. Fox, circle his hilltop home with the combined force of their 108 employees armed to the teeth with a fox-obliterating arsenal. And even though Mr. Fox has been feeding his family by stealing the farmers' wares, it is less than a fraction of 1% of what they have in their gulag-like storerooms. He pinches a chicken from one, a goose from another, and a bottle of cider from Bean, but the farmer's retribution is so overblown, that dark psychotic comedy that Dahl was so good at, that you wonder for the mental health of the three. It is part of the reason why we readers so quickly find ourselves siding with the charming and clever Mr. Fox. He may steal poultry from the farmers, but he is infinitely more likable than they are.
Davy Crockett, seeing his duty clear. When he come home, his politicking was done.
After this, I talk darkness, allegories, and the lack of sentimentality in Roald Dahl's fantastic Mr. Fox. This is 50 Books in 50 Weeks, brought to you in collaboration with Borders. Bookmark BFM 89.9.
Kick a tree, whoopa whoopa, whoopa whoopa, saw a flea. Kick a tree, whoopa whoopa, John. Saw a flea, kick a tree, in the middle of the sea. Well, John.
This is Bookmark. I'm Umar Pagan, I'm PK Pagan, and you're listening to 50 Books in 50 Weeks, brought to you in collaboration with Borders. Today, it's all about Roald Dahl and his fantastic Mr. Fox.
Heard the cat say, please, that's cat. Whoa, John, ho, John, foopa, whoopa, John. Saw a bear, comb his hair, foopa, whoopa, foopa, whoopa. Saw a bear.
Now, one of the reasons Roald Dahl has always been so popular with young people is because he doesn't patronize them. He tells it like it is. Now, I don't know about you, but I outgrew Enid Blyton at a rather young age. The familiar tropes in almost every Secret Seven novel, the predictability of those famous five adventures, very quickly began to wear thin, and I was left looking for something different, something darker, more of a dry martini than a sugar-coated fairy cake. Where the recent spate of YA novels have been getting all the attention for being dark and dystopian, it isn't at all an exaggeration for me to say that Roald Dahl did it first, and that Roald Dahl did it best. He took an almost Mephistophelian delight at the macabre. He never pulled his punches, he never sugarcoated the misery of existence or the trauma of childhood. He didn't care about saving you from your nightmares, and that was precisely what made his work such a pleasure to read. It was precisely what made his work so irresistible, so very necessary.
Way up yonder above the sky, a bluebird lived in a jaybird eye. Buckeye Jim, you can't go. Go weave and spin, you can't go. Buckeye Jim.
The Twits, George's Marvelous Medicine, they are all stories that revel in the gloopy, sticky nastiness of fairy tale villainy. Unlike many contemporary children's books, which tend towards conventional family issues, flatulence and sassy protagonists, Dahl's work is from more of an adult place, a place where death is a very real peril, where the villains are truly the stuff of nightmare, where cruelty is often a motive in itself, and protagonists are usually bright-eyed and sometimes bushy-tailed.
Way down yonder in a holler log, a red bird danced with a green bullfrog. Buckeye Jim, you can't go. Go weave and spin, you can't go. Buckeye Jim.
For 3 days and three nights, this waiting game went on.
How long can a fox go without food or water?
Boggis asked on the third day.
Not much longer now, Bean told him. He'll make a run for it soon. He'll have to.
Bean was right.
Dahl's worlds are often where the dangers of the supernatural are interwoven with the fabric of the real world. His books are fantastical, they are surreal, they are hallucinogenic. His books are so bleak, his villains so dark, you wonder if Dahl was not writing out of a hatred of children rather than an affection for them. You will find no sentimentality here, none, though there is still a sense of morality, if that makes any sense. Take the stupid chickens that Fox steals to feed his family. They may be necessary victims of that circle of life, but Mr. Fox kills them instantly, so they do not suffer. What's more, he explains to Badger that stealing from the farmers to feed their young isn't a crime, and I quote, "We're not going to stoop to their level. We down here are decent, peace-loving people."
Down in the tunnel, the foxes were slowly but surely starving to death.
"If only we could have just a tiny sip of water," said one of the small foxes. "Oh, Dad, can't you do something? Couldn't we make a dash for it, Dad? We'd have a little bit of a chance, wouldn't we?"
"No chance at all," snapped Mrs. Fox. "I refuse to let you go up there and face those guns. I'd sooner you stay down here and die in peace."
Mr. Fox had not spoken for a long time. He had been sitting quite still, his eyes closed, not even hearing what the others were saying. Mrs. Fox knew that he was trying desperately to think of a way out. And now, as she looked at him, she saw him stir himself and get slowly to his feet. He looked back at his wife. There was a little spark of excitement dancing in his eyes.
"What is it, darling?"
said Mrs. Fox quickly.
"I've just had a bit of an idea," said Mr. Fox carefully.
"What?" they cried. "Oh, Dad, what is it?" "Come on," said Mrs. Fox. "Tell us quickly."
"Well," said Mr. Fox. Then he stopped and sighed and sadly shook his head. He sat down again. "It's no good."
When you reread Dahl's books in adulthood, you realize just how brittle they are and how bravely he flaunted the safe, cozy traditions of the children's novel in a way we now take for granted in modern children's literature. In Mr. Fox, there's bad manners, there's drunkenness, and there's greed. There's Mr. Fox himself letting fly a tremendous belch. There's a nasty alcoholic rat shrieking, "Shut up!" And there's the sound of crunching and chewing as the animals attacked the succulent food. There are many interesting allegories you can draw out from the conflict between Mr. Fox and the farmers. There is some fun to be had reading the farmers as lords of the manor and Mr. Fox as a Robin Hood character living up in the woods. In Wes Anderson's marvellous animated film of the book, Bogus, Bunce and Bean are dressed in gentlemanly tweed rather than the rags Quentin Blake illustrates them in the book, with Mr. Fox becoming leader of a band of animals who are all seeking to outsmart the oppressors up on the surface.
Slowly, Mrs. Fox got to her feet. She was suffering more than any of them from the lack of food and water. She was very weak.
"I'm so sorry," she said, "but I don't think I'm going to be much help."
"You stay right where you are, my darling," said Mr. Fox. "We can handle this by ourselves."
In the book, however, the foxes are alone for much of the adventure. Dahl is a lot more stark in his depiction of their predicament. In their deep subterranean hideaway, the Fox family begins to starve, and the reader is not entirely sure that Mrs. Fox is going to make it. Dahl has no issues with putting this awful scenario right up front. One chapter is even titled, "The Foxes Begin to Starve." The language of the book is quite uncompromising throughout. I quote, "How will they kill us, Mummy?" said one of the small foxes. His round black eyes were huge with fright. "Will there be dogs?"
The small fox ran back along the tunnel as fast as he could, carrying the three plump hens. He was exploding with joy.
"Just wait," he kept thinking. "Just wait till Mummy sees these."
He had a long way to run, but he never stopped once on the way, and he came bursting in upon Mrs. Fox.
"Mummy," he cried, out of breath. "Look, Mummy, look, wake up and see what I've brought you."
Mrs. Fox, who was weaker than ever now from lack of food, opened one eye and looked at the hens.
"I'm dreaming,"
she murmured, and closed the eye again.
"You're not dreaming, Mummy. They're real chickens. We're saved. We're not going to starve.
Mrs. Fox opened both eyes and sat up quickly. "But my dear child," she cried, "where on earth? Boggis's chicken house number one," spluttered the small fox. "We tunneled right up under the floor, and you've never seen so many big fat hens in all your life. And Dad said to prepare a feast. They'll be back soon."
But allegory and darkness aside, what makes this story stand the test of time is still the fact that it is a damn good story. You have a hero who is flawed yet extremely charismatic. You have villains who are truly awful. And you have Quentin Blake, whose illustrations are positively harmonious throughout the pages. Mr. Fox appearing nimble, dandyish in actual fact, in his waistcoat and cravat, with the mechanical diggers who are pushed back by Blake to an ominous and demonic silhouette as they carve up the hillside, the scenery literally filling with inky blackness. Roald Dahl's fantastic Mr. Fox is a story of the heartland, of the people of the earth, of the working man doing what he must to provide for his family.
Starts always with a tiny little seed of an idea, a little germ. And that even doesn't come very easily. You can be mooching around for a year or so before you get a good one. When I do get a good one, mind you, I quickly write it down so that I won't forget it, because it disappears otherwise, rather like a dream. But when I get it, I don't dash up here and start to write it. I'm very careful. I walk around it and look at it and sniff it.
Next week, we take a trip down the rabbit hole with Alice. You've been listening to 50 Books in 50 Weeks, brought to you in collaboration with Borders. This is Bookmark on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.